Hello, I'm your host, Larry Bennett, and you're listening to the Future of Publishing podcast series. This series is brought to you by NorCompo, a leader in typesetting and digital services for 50 years, in collaboration with Publishers Weekly. Production is provided by BookBuddy Media, a leading supplier of audiobook services. This series gives listeners a wide range of perspectives by industry leaders who share their experiences and who enlighten us on their vision of the future of publishing. So, let's get started. Good morning and welcome to NorCompo's podcast series, The Future of Publishing, in collaboration with Publishers Weekly with technical support from BookBuddy Media. I'm your host, Larry Bennett. And with me today, I'm honored to have Dennis Aboud, the president, CEO, and chairman of ReaderLink. Before we get started, just a little bit of background. Dennis bought Levy Home Entertainment in 2011, became CEO with the goal of becoming the dominant distributor of books to major non-bookstore retailers. He's achieved that goal in spades. Levy was already a significant player in that space, but acquisitions of large and small competitors made ReaderLink the unchallenged leader in selling books to Target, Walmart, BJ's, warehouse clubs, drugstores, food stores, and the like. The purchase a few years ago of Baker & Taylor Publishing added a fresh dimension on, of course, the publishing side and a large facility in San Diego. Today, the company operates with around 3,000 employees, 4 distribution centers, and reaches 70,000 outlets owned by 700 retailers. Did I get that right?
You did, yes.
Yay, okay. And ReaderLink works with about 300 publishers, offers services, of course, in distribution, but category management, marketing services, proprietary ebook solution, and of course, merchandising. Now, good morning, Dennis.
Morning.
Thank you so much for joining us today in PW's lofty headquarters here in New York City.
My pleasure.
Okay, we're going to talk a little bit about ReaderLink and the future of publishing and how maybe they intersect. But, you know, what on earth, I know you come from a distribution background, but why did you decide to go into what a lot of industry pundits say is very slow or no growth industry, the book industry, especially on the print side?
Well, in 2011, that was a fairly aggressive decision back when everybody thought the world was going to go totally digital on the publishing side. And I believe that, you know, books have been around since before the Gutenberg Bible. I didn't see the format going away. I think that what was happening in the industry positioned somebody to become a major player via a roll-up. And that was the strategy that we tried to deploy, and I think we've pulled it off.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly seems like it's worked. And your customer base, the major non-bookstore trade, it seems like their share is growing. Is that correct?
That's correct. Particularly, the club channel is doing well. We're seeing actually a rebound in space for a while there. All of our major retailers who were doing store planning 2-3 years out were looking and thinking, okay, well, this is going to constrict just like, you know, music and video did, and, you know, the business can be largely, you know, digital. So what happened was the store planners were making our departments smaller and smaller and smaller. So we've embarked on kind of a re-education process with our retailers, and I think it's been pretty successful. We saw space increases in Target of about 18% last year, and Target's a very major player for us. Walmart now is starting to look at expanding their departments. They just announced 14 stores where they're putting in 200-foot departments. So,
wow,
making a material difference in how they go to market.
Right, and as they do that, does that expand the number of titles available?
It does, yes. You know, we have to be sort of a best of the best type of retailer or reseller. You look at somebody like Baker & Taylor or Ingram, where they're carrying, you know, 700,000 to a million titles. That's not us. I mean, we're 10,000-15,000 titles, but, you know, we buy by the boxcar load because of, you know, who our customers are. So anytime we get an opportunity to get some additional space, we can really move the needle on, you know, that incremental product that we put in.
Sure, absolutely. Now, just a general retailing question. To me, as I look back at history, it looks like book retailing goes in 20-year cycles. In the 1940s and 50s, hopefully before most of our listeners were around, department stores, if you can believe that, dominated the trade book sales. You had places like Macy's, Bamberger's, Gimbel's selling books. 60s and 70s saw the rise of mall-anchored bookstores such as Walden Books, got up to 3,000 by 1981, mall-based bookstores. The 80s and 90s featured the growth of the superstores, which in those days were considered the bad guys, putting all the little guys out of business. That was mainly Barnes & Noble and Borders, and we all know what happened to Borders. The last 20 years, we've seen the rise of Amazon and the emergence of e-books. So Dennis, what do you think's going to happen to book retailing in the next 20 years? Where is it going?
You know, I think book retailing is going to be alive and well. Obviously, you've got a big online business that continues to grow just for no other reason other than, you know, increased adoption and, you know, depth of product selection. I think that our retail partners are really relying on the category for to drive impulse sales. And I think if you look at trade book selling, I think we're seeing a trend where trade book selling needs to be more experiential. People want to go into the stores and have an experience. They don't want to just go in and shop for books. Since, you know, the vast majority of discovery still takes place in physical stores, I think there will always be a place for bookstores, but they're going to have to evolve.
Right. And your types of customers, do they also have people who come in the way people come into a Barnes & Noble and just kind of sit around for an hour and just read a book, maybe read another book, and just hang out?
Well, as far as real estate goes, real estate in a Target, a Walmart, a Costco is pretty precious. And,
right.
You know, we've presented concepts to some of our accounts where we've put in, you know, coffee bars, and we've put in, you know, sitting areas and lounging areas and story stages and all those things. But the truth is their merchandising spaces at such a premium, it's hard to get a payback on those things.
Sure. Totally understandable. Now, your customers tend to, as you mentioned, Dennis, carry a very narrow, or I shouldn't say very, but a narrow selection of books, books that have a very good chance of having success. Now, there's been a tremendous growth of indie publishers and self-publishers, and maybe they're one and the same thing these days. But is there an opportunity for that type of publisher to break out in your types of outlets?
Yeah, I mean, you know, good examples. You know, Sourcebooks certainly has been a great partner for us, and they grow with us every year. And, you know, they keep introducing new product, they're acquiring new properties, and it's been a great partnership. You know, some of the smaller children's publishers we've really put on the map. They started with some nice product, and we were able to build upon that and help them make some development decisions based on the data that we have and what, you know, guidance we can give them with respect to what's going to work in our channels.
Sure. And these days, as you know, self-publishing accounts for about 75% of new ISBNs coming out every year. That doesn't even account for all the non-ISBN books being published in places like Smashwords, Blurb. Do you see any chance for like those types of books to get into any of your outlets? Are there, you know, like Barnes & Noble has a separate publishing arm. You have Kobo has Kobo Writing Life. You know, with the clout that some of your customers have, they could really help indie authors.
Yeah, I think, you know, it gets hard to do one-off projects, but what you see is the, you know, the big five publishers are regularly trolling what's working on Amazon, and, you know, you get authors like Amanda Quick that started out in, you know, self-published ebooks and, you know, transitioned to a big five publisher, and that's about when we would pick them up. With the depth of our assortment or the narrowness of our assortment, obviously, you know, to try to lean in on independent, you know, one-off titles probably isn't going to be in our best interest or our customers' best interest.
Sure, and then that makes perfect sense. So as you look at the universe of publishers, there's been a tremendous amount of consolidation. The big sevens becomes the big six, becomes the big five, and you know, maybe McDonald's will buy Burger King, who knows? But what do you see in our industry in terms of publisher consolidation? Do you think there'll be a lot more, or if we kind of hit a plateau?
I think there's going to be an awful lot of consolidation. I think a lot of the smaller publishers have, you know, I think are determining that they don't have the economies of scale to compete effectively. And in some cases, we're seeing, you know, them look to, you know, market their businesses or consolidate with other players. You know, you mentioned earlier in our off-camera discussion, Quarto. Well, Quarto's been, you know, a pretty good example of someone who has gone out and kind of systematically rolled up small publishers. I think as far as the big five, you know, I hesitate to offer a prognostication, but every other industry for the most part ends up with three major players. And, you know, I guess we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, now I come from a distribution background myself, having worked with Baker & Taylor and Bookmasters. And one of the things I admire about ReaderLink is that you're not just a distributor. You offer a lot of guidance in the types of services that you offer, and maybe it's because your customers need it. Some people might have called you a rack jobber 20 years ago. I don't know if that term is still around. But those types of skills, which are fairly unique, are they transferable to outside of the United States?
You know, we've looked at that periodically, and I can see us, you know, we do some business around the world now. We do all the military exchanges all over the world. We do some business in Australia, the UK, a little bit in the Asia Pacific region. But I think that, you know, we are looking hard at the UK. That would probably be the next market that we would consider going into. And yes, we do believe the skills are transferable.
And just a basic technology question. I know that, Dennis, you've been known to use technology to your advantage to really drive down costs, making ReaderLink more profitable, which is quite admirable. In terms of technologies for the book industry, have you seen anything on the horizon? I know you get around quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that's going to make a resurgence is augmented reality. I saw some of it at the London Book Fair when I was there a couple of weeks ago. And I think that, you know, customers didn't particularly understand augmented reality until Pokemon Go came along. Right. And they understood augmented reality. So I think it's going to be a slow build, but I think it's going to do particularly well in the long run.
Now, would that have impact on the educational market only, or would that have be a consumer product as well?
No, I can see it being a consumer product as well. I mean, I've seen books where, you know, about bugs for children or dinosaurs where, you know, things spring off the page and come to life when you look at it through a screen. And I think, you know, it's good because it's kind of a way to, you know, get your child sort of unplugged while they're still plugged, if that makes any sense.
Yes, no, absolutely. Now, so looking at augmented reality, are you guys at ReaderLink at all in the educational space?
We are not, no.
Okay, so the retailers that you work with don't really even try to get into that business at all?
Now, it's the educational market. Typically, the profit margins are pretty low. There's a huge secondary market where, you know, people are buying used books, renting used books. That's an area where I don't think we'll ever play.
Now, what about ebooks? As you know, ebooks have made a pretty drastic evolution over the last few years, I shouldn't say few years, maybe 10 years, going from EPUB to EPUB 2 to EPUB 3, and EPUB 3 having major characteristics, major capabilities that EPUB 2 didn't have, such as interactivity, video, audio. How does that play into your strategy, and where do you see that going in the future, Dennis?
You know, I think our customers, primarily the big box retailers, have made sort of a conscious decision to not really jump into the digital world until, you know, recently Walmart sort of struck a deal with Kobo and it hasn't launched yet. Obviously, we wish them the best. They're our customer, but we think that in order for ebooks to work in our channels, there needs to be a strong collaboration with the in-store business, because that's really the strategic advantage our folks have, is the thousands of stores where, you know, where they're offering product. So I think that what we're aiming to do is to develop a separate platform under the URL mylibrary.com. And the idea would be that we can create an affiliate program with our customers where they don't need to worry about the technical integration so much, but, you know, rather just direct customers to us, and, you know, we'll, you know, compensate them for doing that.
Sure. And you mentioned the in-store component. Mm-hmm. Barnes & Noble obviously tried to do that with Nook, but tried to take on Amazon directly, which maybe isn't the best idea in the world, and certainly didn't have the resources to pull it off. But, you know, some of the customers you work with, obviously, like Walmart, have tremendous resources.
Sure.
And could certainly, I don't know, don't you think they could be much more effective?
Yeah, I really do. And I mean, you know, I think for validation, look to Amazon. I mean, you know, they went from digital to physical bookstores, right?
Right.
So I guess, you know, our retailers are really kind of woken up, particularly with respect to Amazon. And, you know, Amazon gets a lot of positive press. They're very good at what they do. But, you know, at the end of the day, Walmart's still about four times their size. And, you know, the rate of growth that Amazon has experienced is unprecedented. But, you know, I think our retailers have now woken up. They're taking a very aggressive stance. We have been saying to them, you know, books have been a pivotal category for Amazon. You know, they started in books. They started the marketplace in books. They started the device business in books. They started physical stores in books. So, you know, we think it's the book category can be used as a strategic weapon against Amazon.
And do your types of outlets agree that books are indeed a category that where they can grow?
Yeah, I mean, you know, particularly in you know, among the entertainment sector. You know, you have magazines declining 12% a year. You know, you have video declining 10-12% a year. You have audio CDs almost gone, but still declining about 10% a year. And then you've got books at a, you know, 3% or so growth rate. And, you know, it's a mature industry. But, you know, we can move that needle significantly, you know, if the right content comes out, you know, and it really depends on the content. If the content that hits in a particular year is more of a literary nature and it goes to the bookstores or it goes online, if it's commercial, like a 50 Shades of Grey or a Harry Potter or something along those lines, you know, then, you know, we can jump up to as high as 70% market share.
Wow. That is significant. Well, one of the trends we've been following is digital print technology, and that's, of course, had a huge impact on almost all sectors of the book industry, driving down per unit costs in print on demand and short run digital printing. And more recently, high quality inkjet color printing is a game changer, especially with books that use color, like travel books, photography books, and picture books. So, you know, you as a guy who's really been around and knows a lot, do you expect to see significant innovation or advancement in digital print over the next 5 or 10 years? And how can distributors take advantage of that, like Readerling?
Well, I think that, you know, obviously we're carrying approximately $250 million worth of inventory in our facilities. So from that standpoint, you know, anything that we can do to reduce our working capital of carrying that inventory is a good thing. What we've seen up to this point, though, is, you know, the cost per unit on a digital book still has not gotten anywhere near cost that's produced on a press. And but what we are seeing happen is some innovative things being done with digital. So we're seeing personalized books now where you can, you know, put a child's name in a story. We're seeing personalized, geographically relevant books where, you know, Santa comes to Los Angeles, Santa comes to Chicago. And I think those types of short run opportunities have been very successful.
Right, and that's maybe some of your partnership with Sourcebooks you're
yes.
talking about.
Yes,
I know they've been particularly successful mm-hmm. with innovative programs like that.
Yes.
Going back to ebooks, You know, you guys do such a great job with merchandising. Can't those skills be transferable to ebook curating and really helping those guys?
Absolutely. We believe that. And, you know, we were very early in the market with an ebook platform, early in our market when after we acquired the first business. And we were a little bit of a cure in search of a disease. You know, we went to our customers and we couldn't really get them to understand what we were trying to do. We tried to get them to integrate onto their sites, and we tried to create as light an integration as possible. But back in those days, you know, they had backlogs of projects and, you know, you just couldn't get the priority. So we've decided to fall back and kind of regroup on that and sort of take a position where, you know, we'll develop the site and have it be informed by the data that we have that's working in the retail stores, and try to create an affiliate program with our retail partners where, you know, we can capitalize on their traffic, both in store and online.
So your expertise, their traffic, together makes a successful program.
Yeah, and, you know, customers are in places where you wouldn't really think about it. You know, Walgreens, for example, drug chain. Well, they have 90 million loyalty club members, and they know what those folks have bought. You know, they know if they bought diapers, and maybe we want to market children's books to them. You know, we know if they bought, you know, health and beauty aids, you know, we can market, you know, health-oriented books to them. So I really think it's going to open up a lot of new markets if we remove the barriers to digital selling.
Sure. That makes perfect sense. And, you know, you guys have achieved so much success. Is there room for growth for ReaderLink in terms of new outlet opportunities beyond just increasing volume per store?
Yeah, so what we're doing is really we have a kind of a three-pronged strategy right now. One is to sell books to non-traditional retailers. And we have several tests going right now. We're testing pilot gas stations. You know, they're truck stops, but they get 30 busloads of tourists running through each one of these facilities every day. So that's, you know, an outlet that we could sell books in. We opened up Staples recently. Staples is offering some business books. They're going to offer some bestsellers in some of their stores. It's in a test program now. It's just rolling out. We've been working with Party City. We opened up Party City earlier this year. They had a phenomenal sell-through on a promotion that we did. And we're going to continue to seek out opportunities like that. We've set up a separate business development department who's really charged with two things: finding new outlets and helping us sell across the box in our existing retailers. So there's, you know, opportunities in arts and crafts, there's opportunities in stationery, and we need to get better about being able to put some product in those departments.
And I would imagine that your skills in merchandising and curation really make that work.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we get POS data from tens of thousands of stores every day. And so it gives us the ability to kind of see what trends are emerging and also to understand what gaps there are in the marketplace. And, you know, we can, you know, either take that opportunity to a publisher or, you know, do it through our own publishing company and have these gaps be filled by a product that's informed by our database.
And with the kind of volume that's going through the operation, Dennis, are you able to get some unique product that's only available through you guys for a time?
Yeah, we regularly work with publishers on exclusives, and we'll get you know, product with different cover treatments. We'll get product with some sort of value add, maybe a poster or something in the product. And we think that's good. It's a differentiator. It, you know, helps our customers not have a perfect comparison with Amazon. They seem to like it, and we seem to like it, and publishers seem to like it, so it works.
Yeah, I know you have a son in the business, and, you know, it's always hard working for your dad, I guess, but at least it's a big organization, not a mom and pop. But what advice in general would you give to a young person who's kind of starry-eyed looking, they want to get into the book industry? What would you say, maybe in PR or finance or selling?
You know, I think whatever you have an affinity for, you just, you know, got to do it as best as you can. And, you know, I think roles have a way of finding people rather than people finding roles.
Right, and that makes sense. Dennis, I know you acquired Baker & Taylor's publishing business, a very substantial business, maybe $80 million business or so, a few years ago. Mm-hmm. How does that relate to the distribution business? Is that strategic? Does it help?
Well, we've got a very large distribution pipeline. And the goal of our publishing business is really, you know, kind of twofold. One is to create unique, innovative product that doesn't necessarily line up directly with something that you're going to see online. So it's a differentiator for our customers to have that type of product with value engineered into it. Secondly, I think that, you know, we have this vast database, as we've talked about, of customer data and trends. And we don't use our publishing company to knock anybody off the shelf that needs to be there, but we do find gaps and we try to publish to those gaps. And typically that's been very successful because our decisions are informed by the data we have.
And does running a publishing company also help you understand your suppliers better?
I would say it does. It's a humbling experience in some cases. So when something doesn't work, but we have, you know, we've always maintained good relationships with our suppliers. I don't think we're too heavy-handed, and I think we have a good, you know, working relationship.
Sure. Your in-house publishing arms, are they also publishing ebooks?
Yes, they are. Actually, we outsource the ebook production, but we do have ebook formats.
Going through all the traditional channels,
yes.
Like Apple.
Yes, for appropriate product, yes.
Exactly. So Dennis, how much does foreign language play into your business model, especially obviously Spanish in the United States?
Well, we see pockets where, you know, you really need to have Latin products. So for example, you know, South Florida, Texas, certainly Southern California, some of the border states. And it does pretty well. But, you know, again, with our limited product assortment of, you know, a few hundred titles in a store at any particular time, the ones that are in there, you know, that are Spanish language titles really need to kind of earn their keep. And in a lot of cases, they do very well. And in some cases, you know, we find that it just doesn't work.
Sure. And I ran Spanish for Baker & Taylor. I understand there's always a greater expectation than the reality in that market. But you
right.
get a few standouts like Isabel Allende
sure.
and Gabriel Garcia Marquez. And then there's kind of everybody else,
right.
unfortunately. Now, what about translations? I know that one of the big growth areas for Amazon and others has been translations of very successful foreign works brought into English and made available in the United States. Is that any part of your strategy?
No, the only thing we're doing is some co-editions with respect to children's books. Where we are working with some folks overseas, if they've got product that we think works and it's not being produced here in the States, we'll work to bring it in.
And do you have any major competitors in the United States?
Well, certainly, you know, Ingram and Baker & Taylor are out there. We think that, you know, they're very good at what they do, very deep in product assortment, very deep in services. I think from a direct competition standpoint, we offer a lot of things that they don't. I think they're very good at putting product in a box and getting it out to a customer or offering the publisher services that they offer. I mean, we really are more of a cafeteria plan where you can literally give us a patch of real estate in a store. You know, we may fixture it. We will determine what the category assortment should be. We'll determine what titles should be there within the category. We'll determine the quantity of that product that we'll put in. We determine the replenishment algorithms. We send people into the stores to merchandise it. We send people into the stores to take it out when it doesn't sell. So it's a little bit different. We're a very high-touch business, and that's why we focus on non-traditional booksellers, because our folks really don't have the resources to curate an assortment the way that our marketing team does.
Sure, no, absolutely. And you mentioned, you know, like Party City and on Walgreens and, you know, and gas stations, truck stops, which just kind of blow my mind thinking about it. But the truck stop certainly, it's like sort of an extension of airport stores. So it
sure.
makes sense in that sense. But is the vast majority of the business still from the big box stores?
Yeah, really the big box stores and the club stores. We have 718 customers. Our top 20 are 95% of our volume. So, it's really concentrated towards the usual suspects of, Target, Walmart, Costco, Sam's Club, BJ's, Meijer, et cetera.
And when they buy, I would imagine they buy very deep. They buy chain wide or is it
yes.
Regional?
No, it's typically chain wide. We have a couple of players that do like to buy regionally. Kroger's a good example. They've got numerous banners. The things that work in the Pacific Northwest wouldn't necessarily work in Georgia. So what we try to do is, add some regional product into the mix to make it topical for their customer base.
Are you working with magazines as well, or is it just books?
No, I used to be president of Charles Levy Circulating Company, so I know the magazine business pretty intimately, and I know enough about it to know I don't want to be in it.
Okay, well, that about wraps it up. Dennis, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you, my
pleasure. This has been great, and safe travels.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Future of Publishing podcast. Do not hesitate to subscribe to the series. If you like this podcast, you can say it with stars, preferably 5, and share it with your friends and colleagues. You can find us on all podcast platforms, including the pre-installed podcast app on iPhones and on Android podcast apps. You can follow us on our webpage, www.nordcompo.com/podcast. Where you can sign up for our newsletter and check out the full schedule of upcoming podcasts. I'm Larry Bennett. Hope you will catch our next podcast.